afternoon. You are joining the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And if all three of us aren't here, it's not really We the People. It's sort of We Are Pretending, which is what we'll be doing next week. Aren't we having We Are Pretending next week, Bob? You're gone, right?
At this point, yes.
Oh, well, so it's up for grabs. So we'll see. We'll see who we have next week and what's going on there. So we're being joined by Ross and Fred, and I was trying to pull my page up here so I have my information in front of me. And they are both activists, basically, with the Organization of Iranian American Communities. And we've been talking in the first hour about all sorts of stuff, oil and Syria and human rights. The human rights stuff is really big. I hope that you will take a moment and go to their website. It's oiac.org. And if you forget, just go to our site. It's linked on there for you. But before we were so rudely interrupted, we had to rudely interrupt Fred again. Sorry, Fred. Continue your thought.
Yeah, we were talking about the ties with the Taliban and Iran and some recent events.
Sure. Yeah, and I have another example which easily you can access the internet is regarding to the leaders of the Al-Qaeda. They are living in Iran, in Karaj. And actually, even the State Department, in one of the reports, they mentioned that they are in Iran, the leadership. And also from there, they are also organizing crime in the other countries too also. Therefore, really, the problem I will see with the line of appeasement, what the United States is with the Iran line of appeasement, practically with that concept is not covering this kind of report, because they're hoping that the behavior of Iranian government and Islamic fundamentalism may change. And as we have seen through the history, for last 30 years, this is not working. And this policy, is not working because Iranian government, they have done so many crime in that area that they are not capable of this kind of change. And if they want to do that, they know they are going to be overthrown by the people very, very fast.
Now, the events that are taking place in Turkey, and I think today there was another bombing there, this is all being backed by Iran, isn't it?
Some of it is. Some of it is by ISIS, and some of it is the problem between the government of Turkey and Kurds, by the way, sometimes government of Turkey, they use ISIS as an excuse to go inside the Iraq or Syria to bomb or kill Kurdish people. So they have differences, a lot of problems since years ago. A lot of Kurds, they are not allowed to have a Kurdish name, or they talk to their language inside Turkey, so they are limited a lot. So Turkey uses this as an excuse, but in general, like we said before, Iran likes to expand its fundamentalist ideas in the whole region and eventually in the whole world. And they openly mentioned many times that they want to put their flags on White House. So there is no limit where they want to go, what they want to do. They are trying this terrorist activities everywhere. And as long as we give them ransom and we give them, we legitimize them by talking to them, sitting at the same table with them, they are going to continue doing that. What I mean is we don't talk with Al-Qaeda's leadership or ISIS leadership, but why we talk to Iran, why we sit down and legitimize them, I don't understand.
Now, we're being told that by our administration that ISIS is basically on the run, and we're actually winning that battle against them, and their numbers are dwindling. Is that true?
There is no accurate number, but I can tell you, yeah, they are not. They don't have they run everywhere. They are free to be in Syria and Iraq and a little bit on other parts of the world. And They have no problem in that area.
They can move as freely as they like.
Exactly.
I think our policy in Middle East is not working.
Yeah.
And based
Say that
on
again.
When the policy is not working, how they could be on run practically. We need to have a changing our policy in that area. And without any major change, I mean, we are not going to be on the winning side at all.
Yeah, it seems like all of the things that we've done. I guess maybe it's a better question. When was the last time we had a decent policy over there? Did we ever? Were we ever going the right direction?
You know, we have one, I think, in my opinion, is
yeah.
that the sources information we are getting from Middle East is not from the good sources. And when the State Department, in my opinion, is when, you know, when we are not getting good sources sometime, then we are object to make a mistake in our policy.
Mm. Yeah, we
and
talked about that.
That's the root of the problem you're having.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday, that the information in our U.S. intelligence community is basically getting their intelligence from the cheapest guy over there, whoever they can give money to. And you were saying that
you give
people money and they'll tell you whatever you want to hear.
Really?
Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. That's what we see as a problem. When you don't have a good sources of information, it's very hard to do the good analysis.
Yeah, in Iraq war, we were relying on Chalabi's information, which was at the same time the agent of Iran, and we were using his information in UN and in Congress, in Senate, everywhere. And now, after that, Iran is using very complex system, spreading the news everywhere and lying about things. And they have been successful, unfortunately.
Now, how do we get accurate information that we can trust out of Iran and out of a government basically that's they're criminals? How do we go over there and get information from such a closed, tight society?
That's a good question, Bill. This is where we have to have dialogue with opposition. You know, like since 37 years ago, anything opposition said has been true, including information regarding nuclear activities, Iran's nuclear activities. So we should dialogue with the opposition too, and then we can, I'm not saying to 100% accept anything, but at least we can compare them and we can verify that which source is true. But as long as we deal only with mullahs and we sit down and negotiate with them, we are getting those kind of information and we are not investing on real news or real information.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, me and Russ, we are not against the negotiation. You know, negotiation is good, but if it is working.
Right.
But when it's not working, we need to come up with a result and conclusion that really is not working. And, you know, based on your question also, the Iranian people, they have been the first victims of this Islamic fundamentalists in that area. And, you know, Khomeini, he executed more than 100,000 of them to take power in Iran. And practically, when Khomeini, he came in power in Iran, he closed all the universities for 2.5 years in Iran because he said these people in university, the students, they are pro-West, we don't need them. Therefore, we mm-hmm. have a huge challenge against this Islamic fundamentalism since Khomeini, he came in power in that area. Therefore, these people, you know, with like the gathering we had in Paris, is exposed so much information. What is the option we have? How to handle this Islamic fundamentalism? And I think this Paris, we get a lot of attention and a lot of people are coming to that meeting because they will see the solution, how to resist this Islamic fundamentalism and how to arrange and how to organize to get the better, you know, to get to the Middle East to solve the problem.
What, as far as the resistance in Iran goes, the United States has recently, maybe not so recently, had a reputation of always supporting the wrong side over there and just making a bigger mess of things. What is the resistance attitude towards Israel? We haven't really talked about that.
Mm.
Yeah, as far as resistance, we have a statement from the National Council of Resistance of Iran, which is a coalition of many different organizations, which biggest one is PMOI, or Mujahideen of Iran. They have a statement regarding a two-state solution for the Middle East, but beyond that, we think that it's between people of both countries to come to the solution, and we really believe in peace and peace and in Middle East.
Yeah, because I'm curious. We know we want to talk some about solutions, and I guess by way of getting to that topic, I'm curious if you could about what it would look like if the opposition was running Iran versus what's happening now.
I mean, you know, that's a good question. I'll go back to Israel. That's the situation. We are not going to have, you know, Iran is not there for in that future. It's not going to support Hamas or all the Jihad Islami, all those radical groups, you know.
Oh, that'd be a nice
therefore,
change.
So the Israel and Middle East problem, I think we need to defeat this Islamic fundamentalism in that area. And that's why, you know, we're going to have a peace in that area. You know, if you look at it before Khomeini came in power in Iran, there was no any major conflict between Shia or Sunni, or there, we didn't have this Islamic fundamentalism before. Therefore, if we solve the root, if we get rid of the root of the problem in that area from where it started, therefore, I think it's going to bring peace in that area. And also, the Iranian opposition, they do believe to the non-nuclear Iran and Democratic Republican, which is going to be a very good sample for that area to spread and to get to the democracy to that area.
Is it that
you have it on your website when it's OYA goals? If you go to the bottom of that paragraph, you see click here, and it's 10 principles points from Mrs. Rajavi. And if you look at that, it says the difference between these two governments is totally different. Is the opposition believes in secular government, freedom of religion, separation of church and state, freedom of women, and all those 10 points, if you look at it, it's really impressing that, you know, in Middle East, some anti-fundamentalist organization believe in those, which is similar to what we believe in United States and our Constitution is. So basically, it's totally different, and there is no comparison between these two.
How would that be any different than when the Shah was running things over there?
Hold on, that's going to be a long answer.
Okay. We'll grab that on the back.
Wait a second, we can't do that and have a break at the same time.
All right.
We'll be right back. We say that all the time. We'll just be right back. It's just too bad you weren't with us yesterday when we talked to Fred and Ross for like hours and learned all sorts of good stuff. You know, I'm sure you finally figured out you should have been there. We'll be right back and do what we can for you in the last 40 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Back.
Right on.
Okay, in the break, I tried to be productive here. So I was looking at the 10-point plan for the future of Iran since, you know, we're looking on the solution side. And one thing caught my eye. In number six, we believe in the rule of law and justice. We want to set up a modern judicial system based on the principles of innocence, the right to defense. I mean, all these things would be really seriously revolutionary. And it says here that the mullah's Sharia law will be abolished. So that's abolishable? I mean, they can get rid of that? Don't you have to have that? Or
no, basically most of the Sharia law is not really, we don't believe it came from Quran or Muhammad. It just, during the time, it just, they build up and they add that and they came up with this. And majority of the Muslims do not believe in those Sharia laws. It's just fundamentalist people that they try to force it and they force other people to follow it.
Nice. So when you see in this country that they're, you know, or in England, different places where they're setting up Sharia courts, you guys just shake your head and, you know, secretly mutter that these people are idiots under your breath, or?
Exactly. This is a very good topic, which we cannot have a Sharia law. Sharia law is made, after Islam, the people, they made their own law based on their own interests over the century and century. And not they're calling Sharia law. But if you check one by one, you will see you cannot find anything to back up those laws, practically. Therefore, the Sharia law, should not be there.
No, we just did a whole show on it last week. And so I guess the confusing question is, it sort of looks like in order to be a good Muslim, you have to believe in Sharia law. But I guess that's not true.
No, that's not true.
Nice.
That's not true. Unfortunately, this has been for years and years has been spread by those like in Iranian mullahs or from the other Sunni side for their mullahs and for their own power. And practically to keep them as religion leaders for their area. But and that need to be changed.
Yeah, obviously.
Before
Sharia.
Ayatollah Khomeini came to power, nobody was talking about Sharia law. Basically, they all came to the surface after he came to power, and they spread that culture and those stuff kind of laws. Plus, we believe in separation of church and state, and because everybody in the country is not same religion, so we cannot have same Sharia law enforced in the country. And Iran has basically a very, very good history of cultural and secularism since 5,000 years ago. And if you look at the Persian New Year, it is on first day of spring. And the reason for that is they don't want any religion to be offended or feel that this is not their ceremony or this is not their New Year. So they went based on nature, not based on religion. And before Ayatollah came to power, we were friends with Christian, Jews, Baha'is, and we were going all in same schools. We had no problem. And I can say before revolution, the biggest Jewish population in Middle East or in the world after Israel was Iran.
So,
but after revolution, many of them unfortunately had to leave the country to other places because of threat from mullah. Same thing with Christians, same thing with Baha'is, and also moderate Muslim had to leave the country, many of them.
So before the Ayatollah came into power, you had the Shah. It seemed to me at that time there was a lot less unrest in the region, but they still threw him out and elected to go with.
Because the time for the one person ruling the country is over, basically. Shah was one family, one person, basically, was ruling the country, and toward the end, you know, it was more tension. He was telling people that if somebody is not agree with me, they can take their passport and leave the country, and stuff like that, which people were not happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to make changes, and Ayatollah Khomeini came and talked very good about, he promised many things, but he never delivered. But anyways, people wanted to change it. But I tell you one thing, you know, in dictatorship, because there is no freedom, there is no political parties, people are not educated with the new system. So when they are overthrown, there is a little chaos there because, like I said, people are not educated. They were not able to talk about anything prior to that. And, of course, there is no organization. But now, with the help of media and help of satellites and everything else, fortunately, in Iran, there is a strong opposition. So this time is not going to be like that time. But, again, ruling one person, whether it's Shah or Shah's dictatorship or Ayatollah's dictatorship, is over.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question, is they didn't like the dictatorship of the Shah, so they brought in the Ayatollah, who was in exile and made a lot of promises, and it turned out he was probably worse than the Shah was, and now they're kind of sorry they went that route. So you think they've learned that now they have a shot at a true democracy?
Kind of a balance.
You know, the Iranian people has been through this religion abuse by Iranian government for a long time. Therefore, that will give them a good experience to know how important to have a secular government. I think what have done Khomeini, you know, he came and he used the revolution and he you know, he established his dictatorship in Iran. But because of the Iranian people are suffering for a long time, for him, they learn a lot that if change coming, need to be, you know, secular government, and, you know, the ideology should be, you know, keep separate than the government. And I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah, Bill, you are right about, you know, Ayatollah being 100 times worse than Shah, but it doesn't make Shah a good person or good system or mm-hmm. not a dictator. Like Fred said, you know, they learned the lessons that either one of those dictators doesn't work. It has to be Republican, and has to be the leader of the country has to be chosen by people exactly the way we do it here.
Yeah, that's the only way. I mean, once you start killing all your citizens and trying to silence everybody and all that, it's like, there's really no coming back from that.
No, there's not. But, gosh, you know, they haven't had the experience of this type of government over there, and I think that's what, I don't know, that's why it fails. I think they get scared of a republic, and they always end up having another revolution. Just about the time they get it off the ground, they revolt and go back to what they know.
During the Shah, you know, Shah killed there are many leaders in the country because he felt they are a threat to him. So there was not a strong leadership at that time. But right now, with the leadership of Mrs. Rajavi, we have a strong leadership and we have a lot of support, and it's totally different with the last time.
Well, that's good to know. And so the people, I'm always kind of curious what will happen. Okay, so let's say just, you know, it works. The opposition works. You get rid of the bad guys. You've installed a basically democratic system. Would people who have lived here, like guys like you that have been here for like 30 years, would they turn around and go back to Iran? How many? I mean, I know you can't give me a head count, but would most people go back? Or would they stay here?
It's like you said, it's hard to tell because many of us, we have our children born here.
Sure.
And they are raised here, so if they go back, they don't know what to do. So we basically we can at least I can tell you we can go back and forth, and maybe some people decide to go back. I do not know. It depends, you know, how good Iran becomes, which I'm pretty sure it will be a lot better than what it is now.
Would you ever feel truly safe going back, knowing that, you know, you have a little target on your back?
Not now. Not right now. If we go, definitely we don't pass the airport. They take us from airport to the jail. But hopefully when it's changed, we'll love to go back and visit.
Yeah, that's a good point, going back and forth. We need to take a really quick break, and we will be right back. You told us a story yesterday of someone who spoke out. I'd like you to maybe tell us that again. Someone who spoke out, but they did it before they got their family out. I don't think people realize the cost of these types of changes on people. We are speaking with Ross and Fred. They are from, they're from Sacramento, actually. But they are with, I should say, the Organization of Iranian American Communities. You can find information about that at oiac.org or on our website, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Okay, Ross and Fred, let's scurry on to solutions. I know you guys did want to cover that.
Yeah, we talked yesterday a little bit about solutions, and I thought it was interesting. One of the things you said was you don't want foreign troops. You don't want military support. What can we do?
Yeah, like you said, a lot of people here, they think when we are talking about change of government in Iran, we are talking about military action. But that's not what we want. It's not possible, and I don't think people of Iran like that too. But the also the appeasing mullahs and sitting down with them and talking to them, legitimizing them is not a good sign either. We should be on side of people, and like you mentioned earlier, we should be on the good side, you know, the side of, you know, people. But what we believe is that we call it third option, and that is to talking and negotiating with opposition, and recognizing opposition, and do not deal with Iran. In other words, we shouldn't pay them money, we shouldn't deal with them, so they are, it makes them weaker, and it makes them easier for people of Iran to overthrow them. And that's basically, that's all we want. We don't want any money, we don't want any weapons or nothing else, just recognition, and that's it.
How do the people overthrow a government that has a military? They're not going to go out quietly. How would that work? What would it look like?
Yeah, the level of support in Iran for mullahs is extremely low. Like in 2008 and 2009 uprising, even mullahs didn't have enough military people to stand in front of people. So they brought many people, many army people from Syria and from Iraq by Maliki and Assad. So in a case, each one of them have trouble, they help each other. At this time, Iraq and Syria, because of their own problem, they are not able to send troops like 2008 and 2009 to help them out. So we think the level of support for mullahs is so low that doesn't matter how strong their military is, they are not able to confront people. Same thing happened during the Shah. He has one of the biggest military biggest one in the region, and one of the biggest in the world. But when people came to the street, and they could not do anything about it, and they fall in like few months.
So you don't feel the military in Iran will support the mullahs?
They do, but not in a bigger scale. You know, like they are. If they see people coming to the street, because many people who work for military, they do it because they don't have jobs.
You know, in Iran, the Arabs, the Kurds, the Turks, the women, the student, teacher, worker factories. You're talking about everybody is almost, you know, all the group. They don't like this government. And they're all united against this law of the supreme leaders. Therefore, in 8 years ago, when people that saw witness within the Iranian government, they came out on the street and they make the movement. But right now, these people, they are not in the point of economy, they are not in the better situation compared to 8 years ago. And they are much, much, much worse situation. Therefore, once they find the situation is right, they will be ready again. At the same time, Iranian opposition is very important to be organized inside Iran for that time and to be ready for that. Because we know the Iranian government, they are organized too. They have a military, they have a Basij, they have Islamic Guard, and it's not going to be easy. But as much the Iranian opposition is more organized and ready to help the people during the uprising, easier will be, you know, and will be more hope also for that.
How much influence does the Muslim Brotherhood have with the opposition?
I'm sorry, the local brotherhood?
No, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, Muslim Brotherhood mainly was in Egypt. And they, of course, when Morsi was in Egypt, they had a better relationship. But since then, they don't have a good relationship with Iran at this time.
Okay, so they don't have... They don't have a good relationship with the opposition in Iran either?
No,
they don't have any.
They are fundamentalist. Opposition of Iran is basically moderate. You know?
Okay.
We believe if any organization in that area, if you're soft on this Islamic fundamentalism, is going to hurt your organization and you cannot survive. You have to be really have a good red line against this Islamic fundamentalism. Otherwise, you cannot survive in that area.
Okay.
Interesting. We have someone in the chat room wanted to know, what could Americans do to help out?
That's a very good question. Great question. What we do is, like I said, you know, the on 2008, when President Obama unfortunately said to Ahmadinejad, if you open your fist, we shake your hand, and this had a huge effect on Iranian people. They thought they took it as a support for government of Iran. But on the other side, when members of Congress or Senate, they come and they send letter against government of Iran and they talk about human rights, it encouraged people because they see they have a voice in there. And like we mentioned earlier before, there are some apps that people in Iran use and satellites. So every time a member of Congress, Senate, or officials, they support people of Iran and human rights, they encourage a lot. So what we can do, we can call members of Congress and ask them to join. Some of them, they are already starting to work on the campaign of change government of Iran by people of Iran. And if they are a big voice in the Senate and Congress, we can, it helps us a lot. And of course, since we are broadcasting everything over Iran through our satellite, then which is the most watched TV in Iran or satellite, they know when members of Congress, Senate, and other officials, they support them. Also, we are going to have the big rally in New York on this September 20th, when President Rouhani is coming and to UN, and we are trying to say he's not representative Iranian people, and he's representative of Ayatollah Khomeini, which is supreme leader, and we criticize him being in the UN, and anybody in that East Coast can join us, that would be great. But the best you can do is call your representative and senators and ask them to join this campaign.
Nice. I think that's really important. It's important for Americans to figure this out, because we can only hide behind our ignorance so long. I mean, there comes a point in time where, you know, we need to get with the program.
Yeah. One thing, next step, I think, for us in the USA is to highlight the abuse of human rights in Iran. And also because this is the weakness of Iranian government. You know, if they back up from human rights issues, they cannot survive. Therefore, if you put more pressure regarding those, this execution and human rights in Iran, therefore, it really help. And if we can call our representative and ask them, you know, to add new sanctions against the human rights abuse in Iran, I think that will be a good direction also, too.
So I guess it's safe to say that the opposition in Iran is not a big fan of our president.
I like the laughing. The laughing is
like
good.
We like to work with every president, and we like to... What we are doing, basically, is not only for people of Iran. It's also for people of United States. Because, like you mentioned correctly earlier, we are making mistake after mistake, and if we don't mistake, we make those mistakes. If we are able, our organization is able to correct those mistakes with the help of our American people, our American friends, then we can avoid a lot of expense, a lot of wars, and a lot of tension.
Let me ask
and,
you this.
You know, one thing I believe is that when Iranian government, they're forced to come on negotiation table, we could have a better deal. In that time, you know, if we could have a better deal, we could control these mullahs better. unfortunately, we didn't have a good deal in that time, very strong deal. Therefore, I think that's why this problem is coming back and coming back again. Therefore, I wish we have a stronger president, you know, to see the reality of the, there is no change of behavior of Iranian government, and be more realistic.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about...
Final thoughts.
Yeah, final thoughts, and also your organization's involvement in our American politics. Do you guys do that? Do you
want good
that?
Idea.
But we'll talk about that when we come back.
All righty. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. This one is just for laughs, isn't it? And we keep doing that, and it's not helping.
No.
So we have to stop doing that. Either that or maybe we need to target it. Just get the mullahs. Could you even get rid of the mullahs, Ross and Fred? Could you actually get rid of the mullahs? Is that possible?
Yes, it is possible.
I mean, are there just a zillion of them? Are there 5 or 50 or...
Yeah, it is. We think they don't have, like I said, they don't have support of the people. That's why they are trying to expand and have some ground outside of Iran between fundamentalists in the region. And we believe the majority, like over 90% of people, they want government change in Iran. And we try, as a good citizen, we try to... bring our experience and our knowledge about Middle East on the table and make sure our politicians, they understand what they are doing and what the solution is. That's our goal is. So it benefits people of Iran, people of the region, and especially people of United States, like I said, because we don't have to pay for another war, or we don't have to send our lovely youth to war to get killed or wounded. So we think, and we have been very successful as far as having support in the Congress and Senate in a bipartisan, bipartisan way, and we can use a lot of help from our American friends to. Get this going to the right direction and have a right policy in Washington.
And get the facts out. I mean, I guess that's why we thought this was so important to do with you, is so we could get some factual information out for people.
How big is your organization over here in this country, and how active are you in politics in the United States?
We had some resolutions that... basically, we had the majority of House co-sponsoring it. So you can see how widespread our organization is. We are active in 43 states, and we have great grassroots activities, and we have, like I said, many supports, and we still have a lot of support. But we can make it stronger so we can do it faster. But like I said, you know, we have rallies in Washington or D.C. up to 20,000. And we had in Paris at over 100,000. So you can imagine it. This is considering people who come to these rallies or join us, they are accepting a lot of threats and a lot of they have to pay a lot of prices for it.
Sure.
Because of government of Iran. And if we didn't have that fear, you know, we could have a lot more people, you know, joining us, and we had a lot of bigger demonstration and stuff like that.
Well, because
we do have a lot of activities in the House and Senate, and this is all because of we have so many supporters everywhere in the United States.
Okay, so two questions. One is kind of simple. On your website, it says, you know, there's a join button. So basically to join OIAC, do you have to be Iranian?
No, you don't.
I kind of thought not, but I thought I better ask.
No, this is not only for Iranian. That's why in English, too. So
sure.
This is, like I said, our goal is to bring the fact and show the right policy toward Iran and Middle East and how to fight fundamentalists like Ayatollahs and ISIS. So this is basically, we want everybody's help.
Good. So OIAC.org is a great way for people to get accurate information from the people who really want to save Iran from that moment itself.
That's correct.
What was the other thing I was thinking of, too? Oh, you had mentioned, real quickly, we've got probably like a minute and a half, but you had mentioned that there are people who speak out against the current regime, but if they do that before they get their families out, nothing good happens.
Yes, you know, that's a good example. Shahram Amiri was a famous scientist in Iran. And a nuclear scientist in Iran, and he left Iran, and he came to United States. But the Islamic Guard, they went to his family, his kids, and his wife, and they arrested him, and they put a lot of pressure on him to bring him back. And then when he came back in Iran, the next day they arrested him, and then after 1 year, his name Shahram Amiri, after 1 year, they did execute him. Therefore, you know, we, as the experience we have with Iranian government, you know, therefore I think it's better first you move your family out of Iran and then come out of Iran, because, and otherwise the Iranian family, they use your family as a hostage to bring you back to Iran. And
right.
that's what you were trying to mention yesterday.
Did they kill?
In organization, we have so many cases that the people, they have to pay a big price because of they came first and they got their family and they put in a prison.
Did they kill that guy's family anyway?
Not the family. They didn't kill that family, but they used their family. They put them in prison. And
sure.
They constantly, they called Shahram Amiri in the USA, and the family, they begged him, you know, please come back, you will be fine. The Iranian government is telling us if your husband come back or the father come back, nothing will happen to him. And then he went back to Iran, and then they execute him after that.
Lovely.
What's the, give us real quick, the dates of the rallies coming up?
It's September 20th in front of UN, and we expect 15,000 to 20,000 people there. And if anybody can join, or they have friends or relatives on the East Coast in New York, if they join us, that would be great.
All right, fellas, thank you very much for coming on today.
And their website is oiac.org. You can find all their information and contact information, stuff like that. If you'd like to get back to them with us, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you so much for giving us the chance to speak about all these issues.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Thank you. Our pleasure.